The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, February 13th, 2009. This is episode number 164, and I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today talking about all kinds of great stuff about MotoGP. So, got a really, really big show today. Jules and I did another long call, shocker, wrapping up our season review for the 2008 season. Covered the last four races of 2008, which was Japan, Australia, Malaysia, and Valencia. So, kind of both agreed that those last four, it was a bit the relatively boring part of the season. Some great tracks there. Phillip Island in Australia is a wonderful, wonderful track. But the racing at these last four rounds, it had its own points and all of that. We talk about that over and over endlessly in the call. And also some other stuff as we kind of digressed and talked about a variety of other things. So it's a good call. I think you'll enjoy it. Before we get to that, I want to grab a few things out of the email bag, which, by the way, I got a little behind on the email. So if you emailed me and I never replied or something or it took a long time, apologize. Just, the, you know, the usual story. Things have been busy and all that and kind of stuff built up. But first of all, let's see what we got. Several ones that we want to go in. And these are not so much sort of comments, but things I want to tell you about. Things that listeners have told me about and I want to tell you about. And we got a contest. I love contests. Contests are awesome. So first one is from Adam Kress. And you may remember that last year, Adam Kress sent us a link. He had made a really, really cool motorcycle racing calendar. All the schedules on it. World Superbike, British Supers, MotoGP, AMA, all kinds of stuff. And it's going to be, he's also including Canadian SBK on this year as well. Oh, and BSB is new for this year. I thought he had it on there last year. Maybe it was another calendar. All right, I digress. In any case, I've got links for that. You can either download it and have it in your iCal, or you can like subscribe to it so it will update as Adam makes changes or whatever. We'll put the links on there and you'll figure it out. And the other really, really cool thing that Adam has got going on, and this is leading into our contest, so we're not going to make you wait till the end of the show to announce the contest. We'll go and tell you right now. Adam made an iPhone / iPod application that is available from the iTunes App Store. You can view the live lap timing from MotoGP.com with his application and without having to use all the nasty flash and all that business that's on the regular standard web browser. Plus, you know, you've got something that you're carrying around your pocket. So I've got quite a few activation codes that Adam was kind enough to send to us as a contest thing. And off the top of my head, I can't remember if it's 8 or 10, but it's somewhere in that range. Got quite a few. And be able to download this application, which normally sells for $2.99, which to me sounds like a fantastic deal anyway. But you might get to be able to get one for free. So what we're going to do is if you live in the United States, unfortunately, these codes only work at the United States App Store. So if you live in the United States, or you can somehow or other fool Apple into thinking that you're in the United States, and you've got an iPod Touch or, you know, one of the iPods, any iPod that will run a app from the App Store, or an iPhone that will run applications from the App Store, why don't you send me an email, contest164@motogpod.com. Send the email there. I will go ahead and pick at random the winner's names in 2 weeks. So that'll be the show that is on February 27th, episode number 166. We will announce the winners of the iPod / iPhone application to see the live timing. I think that's really cool, and big thank you to Adam. And also, why don't you guys make sure, go ahead, check out Adam's website about his calendar. And if you don't want to wait, or if you're, you know, in the UK or somewhere, you know, outside of the United States, because unfortunately these codes only work in the United States. But if you're somewhere else, check out his application on the App Store, which unfortunately I don't have the exact name for it, but I'm sure it's something along the lines of MotoGP timing. And I'll find out and put it in the notes of the show. So there we go. Thanks a lot, Adam. Let's move on. Next one I have, quite a few years ago, I think this was 2005, Paul Henshaw in the UK contacted me, and he was doing a fundraiser at the time, sort of a cool auction, and we kind of cooperated on it. I mentioned it to him in Shrewsbury in the UK, and Mert Law will send him an autographed picture for them to auction off for charity and all of that. Well, whatever. Paul's got another thing going on now, and it sounds actually kind of fun. So here's Paul's email. This will be the quickest, fastest, easiest way to communicate this with you. He says, you know about the Ewan McGregor and Charlie Borman long way round, long way down thing where they ride around the world on the massive BMWs. Well, Paul and two of his mates are going to try something similar. Got a website, which I'll give you in just a second, but basically, in a nutshell, they're taking the world's highest-selling motorcycle, which is the Honda C90, which is the little step-through that you see. I mean, when you see the picture of the C90, you'll say, oh, wow. Yeah, and this is. They've sold millions of these motorcycles, millions, over years and years. And it's a tiny little motorcycle, top speed 45 miles per hour, Paul writes in his email, which... 100%, I think it'll go faster than that. It, certainly downhill it will. But whatever. They're going to ride one of these each. Well, three of them are going to ride one each all the way around the coastline of Ireland in aid of UNICEF, which is the United Nations International Children's Education Fund or something along those lines, and also the Manx GP Injured Riders Fund. So they're doing this as a benefit. Plus, it sounds like a lot of fun. Plus, they've had fun with their website. And the website is called chasingchickens.co.uk. Chasingchickens.co.uk. They're hoping to get it to be a sort of a bigger thing of getting the trip filmed for a documentary and all of that, but nothing signed yet. But in any event, you can sponsor them. You can help them out. These are great charities. The Manx GP Injured Riders Fund obviously is appealing to all of us as motorcycle racing fans, and UNICEF should be appealing to us as human beings. So check it out, chasingchickens.co.uk. And of course, there will be a link on the website for that. All right, let's see. Last email I got. And when I got this, I sort of said, oh, I got to mention this on the show. But I unfortunately didn't take any notes. So I can't remember what it was that hit me about why I wanted to mention it. So I'm just going to mention it and let you guys figure it out. And this is Gordon Howell at Pole Position Travel. We've mentioned him in a couple of shows previously. He's a great guy. Runs a fantastic organization there. If you want the easy, really, really posh way to go to a MotoGP round, you go Pole Position Travel. You talk to him and he will set you up. It's cool stuff. I got there... Travel preseason 2009 newsletter, get ready for MotoGP action. And basically, why don't you check out their website, polepositiontravel.com. He's got discounts. He's got a Facebook page now. They've got a movie up. Their season there is there. All sorts of great stuff. So if you are at all interested in attending a MotoGP round, particularly one that is a distance for you, or you're not 100% sure of, like, oh, what do I do if I want to go to the MotoGP in Qatar? Well, what you do is you contact Pole Position Travel. So, and I do apologize to my listeners and to Gordon about why I can't specifically remember that I wanted to mention this this newsletter. And I'm looking through it and reading through it, and it's just not hitting me this time, but I'm going to throw it out there anyways, and maybe you'll figure it out. Plus, why don't you go ahead and sign up for his newsletters, polepositiontravel.com. Tell him that MotoGPOD.com sent you. All right, I think we've gone way, way long on the blathering intro, so why don't we go ahead and get on with the call with Jules. All right, we got Jules on the phone. How are you doing today, Jules?
I'm doing okay, Bob.
All right, cool. Have a good week since we last spoke?
Not really, no.
No?
kids sick. Anyway, so but we had some news in MotoGP this week. Obviously, we had the this was the Sepang test. And, and we also are going to do the final four rounds from... the 2008 review, right?
Right, right. So this will be the I don't know, what are we going to call this one? The somewhat boring finish. The
anticlimactic
ennui.
Yeah.
So before we get into talking about the last four rounds, which there are some interesting points that might come up. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, we did have a fairly big news week as far as MotoGP is concerned because of the Sepang testing.
Right.
It wasn't like there was a whole lot of actual news to put out, but they seemed to talk as much as they could about what news there was.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought one of the ones that hit me was that Pedrosa left after two of the 3 days, citing issues with his injuries. Which
his,
now
his knee, I think.
Knee. Was it his knee? Because off the top of my head, I'm like, his injuries to what? But something. Some kind of injury he sustained at the end of last season. And he bailed on the third day of testing. And I thought that was actually a little bit significant.
Yeah, it was. Because, there's the testing schedule in general is just cut down. They're going to be doing less testing during the season, which means that these tests are, that very much valuable. More important.
Right, valuable. Exactly. This is a lot. This is valuable time, and you know, for the Honda factory, for your main guy to bail out on a third of those of the time that he has at Sepang, I think that makes a difference. So I thought that one was kind of interesting, and I'm not saying that Pedrosa is a big wuss or anything like that, although he is, but it's just.
But, I don't know. Sepang's actually the track where he proved he was not a wuss 2 years ago.
This is true. This is true. And so, I mean, and that, in, I guess you could say that that makes this news even more, you know, and I don't know. I'm not trying to get into a political thing that it's politics or anything like that. I just thought it's a bit significant.
Well, there was a story that Kropotkin, David Emmett, caught on MotoGP News, MotoGP Matters, and talking about that, you know, Pedrosa, people are getting kind of fed up with Pedrosa, or actually they're getting fed up with Puig, and that, you know, HRC and Repsol are not going to sponsor the Wonder Kid forever. There's lots of great Spaniards coming up from the 250s that would gladly take a spot on the Repsol team and
do a better job, do a more team player-y, yeah, Nicky Hayden kind of job.
So, and be more of a personality, I guess.
This sells motorcycles.
Sure. You know? Well, yeah. And motor oil.
Yeah, Repsol. Yeah, oil, which is important, yeah.
You know, a guy like Bautista, always smiling and fun loving and very like crafty racer, obviously a very talented racer as well, could very likely be the next target for HRC and Repsol.
Yeah, I hadn't read that story. I mean, I totally agree though that the because it is a business and you've got to have the right face on your sponsorship deal and all of that sort of thing, and that you know, eventually. And again, not to get into a big old Pedrosa bashing session, and I'm not even saying that because I, you know, it's basically that I don't think Danny's pulling through, and you know, and like I said, I'm not saying that because I don't want a bunch of Danny email, I don't want to knock on Danny, et cetera. But I just don't think it's his fault entirely.
Yeah. I know, but I do think that I feel kind of bad for him because I think he's been put in a spot where he's under enormous pressure to perform.
Right.
Not just by his team, but by his manager. And I just don't think he's the kind of racer that can win a championship as long as guys like Valentino Rossi and Casey Stoner are around.
Exactly. Right place at the right time, which does make for champions. I mean, and we've seen that so many times that, you know, if you can be the guy that's there in the year when Valentino is not there or McDoohan or whoever it is at that time, that then you can get the championship. But if those guys are there, you're done. And it's you know, you not even count on getting the championship.
Yeah. And I mean, it's been ages since we've had a Spanish champion, so basically, you know, 99 was the last time.
Yeah, and it was, of course, his name is totally escaping me. Oh, well. Huh? it's gone, dude. I can't remember who it was.
Crevier. You're talking about Crevier?
Yeah, Crevier.
Oh, sorry. You're 99, Crevier.
Yes, thank you. That's why I'm like sort of this,
You but, can cut that part. That one.
I'm not the trivia guy. That's okay. I won't cut it out. But for one, 99 was before I started following MotoGP. And for two, my grasp of MotoGP trivia is nothing compared to yours, Jules. I bow to your greater wisdom and your
fastest time. Yeah, my faster Google typing fingers, you mean?
Maybe that's it, yes. Less clacky keyboard. See, I try to avoid the keyboard thing because then people will hear me typing away.
Actually, that was the previous season was a season I started to sort of get back into it because Crevier and Doohan had a pretty good battle at the end of 98. And then 99 was very interesting already. And then 2000 was when I started watching again.
And 2000 was that the year Kenny Roberts got it?
Yes.
Or was it? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So, and I mean, that was our last anomaly, really.
Yeah. And then after that, it was, well, I guess you could say the Nicky Hayden thing was in.
It was a bit of an anomaly, but it wasn't, I don't think it was as much so as Kenny Roberts.
No.
You know what I'm saying? It was, yes, you're right. Nikki Hayden was ready to step into the gap, but, and I'm not just saying this as a Hayden fan, but I think there was a tad more to it than that. And I'm not, gosh, I mean, this could be, you know, you could, a whole storm of email.
Yeah, think about it though, but I mean, Kenny won 4 races that season.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, he.
Right, and how many did Hayden win in his season?
2.
2, yeah, exactly. And, but on the other hand, I mean, Kenny was battling against Rossi in his very first year in MotoGP.
Yep, and Biaggi, who was very strong.
Right.
And Barros, who was very strong that year.
Yeah. So, granted, I mean, Suzuki and Kenny did well, but...
oh, I see. I'm sorry. Yeah, the circumstances for Kenny's championship, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. I still think of it as more of an anomaly.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm trying to say that without detracting from Kenny Roberts, because I think that Kenny Jr. is a valid racer. The guy is a racer, but he's not Kenny Sr.
No. And I mean, it's not just him. I mean, you look at Suzuki. I mean, Suzuki mm-hmm. hadn't even
right. They were barely really, a blip on the radar.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Basically since Schwantz, they hadn't had any real results. And like Crivier was on the same bike as Doohan, so that was not a big surprise,
right?
And then it was Honda domination after that. So like Suzuki was definitely a blip.
Yeah, yeah. Know? Now with the and I was going to say on that back to the Schwantz time, how much of that was Schwantz
exactly,
and how much of it was Suzuki? Well,
yeah, exactly. And Schwantz was definitely
Schwantz.
Exactly.
I mean, talk about a battler, and you know, again, not knocking Kenny Jr., but he's not Kevin Schwantz.
No,
and you know, it's just everybody rises to the level. Cream goes to the top, etc. And you have the combination of team and rider that rises to the top, and when you make that perfect match, which I think Rossi did with Honda, and then Rossi did with Yamaha. Which also ties in with how important is Jeremy Burgess, and I'm sure. Saying extremely important. That's what does that for you there.
And I mean, if you want to think about it that way, I mean, Jeremy Burgess has been a champion the longest out of all these guys.
Exactly, because, you know, and I think that's been a big part of it. Mid-90s. I really do. Yeah, and so does that mean that in you know, 5 or 7 years from now, we're going to be regarding Casey Stoner as a bit of a blip. Do you think?
Oh, interesting. No, I don't think. I don't know. I don't think so because Kenny's 2001 season was crap,
mm-hmm.
whereas Stoner's 2008 season was definitely not crap.
Definitely not.
Results.
A little bit of bad luck here and there that did the season in, like we talked about last time, where you've got one race you can tank. Right. And other than that, you know, yeah. And I agree. But also, Ducati was out of the mix back then, and Ducati is in the mix now. And Ducati is the one company that has taken over the flag from Honda as far as being the legitimate, real factory that has a fair amount of money they can throw at the problem that is about racing, right?
Right.
Yep. I mean, you could say the privateers are nothing if they're not about racing, but they don't have the money, right?
Yeah, they don't. They also don't have control over the technical direction.
They don't have Dorna in their pocket. Yeah, exactly.
No, I'm sorry. I wasn't being flippant about the Honda thing. I was actually talking about the factory input.
Right. Exactly.
The satellite teams. It's not just that they don't have the money to do it. They don't have the ability to actually make radical changes to their motorcycles.
The resources, which boils down to money. But yeah, exactly.
They have agreements with the factories that they can't make certain changes. Like this time around, there's all this yelling and huffing about the rev limits on the satellite bike Honda bikes.
Right.
They're being limited to, I think, 18.3.
I haven't read that story. Is that only on the satellite bikes though, not the HRC bikes?
No, it's only the satellite bikes.
Oh, okay. See, yeah, stuff like that, I mean, yeah, definitely brings it into the mix. Ducati brings to the table the power of being a legitimate factory that sells lots of motorcycles. Granted, not as many as Honda does, but still lots. Whereas,
I think the difference between Honda sales and Ducati sales are like astronomical, right? And like orders of magnitude difference.
Yeah. Oh, way. But also on the other hand, you have to include how much Honda covers the entire spread.
No,
the entire spectrum.
Of course. That's the thing. It's like, but even if in sports bikes, Honda, Yamaha, Suzuki, Kawasaki, all those guys sell more bikes than Ducati. But it's a different class of customer too, and Ducati's motorcycles are much more expensive, and anyway,
they're like Ferrari. But I really want to kind of continue this. I think this is a great discussion. Team KR mm-hmm. was focused on racing. That's what they did, right? They made motorcycles to race in MotoGP, and they also made parts and stuff to race in other series.
That's right.
And that's all they did. And they were a factory, a legitimate factory, that granted they didn't sell a production motorcycle, but they sold lots of parts.
Yeah.
So on a smaller scale, that's like Ducati, right?
You could say that, sure.
Right. But then on the other hand, on the same scale, their results were much, much different.
But the thing is that, I agree. But the thing is that the Team KR never had a power plant of their own. And I think that it comes down to that perfect match of the frame and just this whole chassis and the electronics and the power plant. And Ducati has been doing, making race bikes since the very beginning, since they've been around. I mean, that's what they've been about.
50-odd years, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that Team KR, you could say, because they made parts and stuff like that, because they made their own chassis, they were sort of like a mini factory team. They never had their own power plant, and I think that makes a very big difference.
Yeah.
And just look at what happened to them. They basically got killed by power plant issues. You know, they weren't able to match it. First, KTM pulling out of them, and then the Honda one not being able to be matched to the 2007 chassis.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And I'm trying to think, before KTM, what was Team KR running? I mean, didn't they do their own engine for a little while, or like basically they were the only guys running the engine?
That kind of technical detail I'm not sure about. Somebody out there might know.
Definitely we can know, and we could look it up online. But yeah, I mean, well, on the other hand, and I'm not trying to totally be argumentative, but just throwing it out as a point. You've got like Aprilia that came out with a coupe and was relatively a disaster.
It was. It was totally a disaster. I mean, right. it was a flaming ball of disaster.
Yes, call it.
Literally.
Yeah.
But it did actually, they did provide a very vital part of the evolution of GP racing, because they were the first fully electronic fly-by-wire racer out there. Now, granted, I think the electronics were just too primitive, which is pretty ridiculous because we're only talking about like 5 years ago,
right?
But or 6 years ago, they pushed the envelope big time technology wise.
Yeah, and I think they did
too much, which is
too
which
much.
Is what hurt
exactly,
them.
Which is what I was going to say. They pushed it too much, and also Aprilia is compared even to Ducati underfunded.
Yes.
So
yes.
It's boiling down again to money. And that's my point. which leads us into another point real quick, a quick segue. You saw Darren Carpenter's email that he alerted us to a news story that Kawasaki is way upping the ante on their superbike efforts. Their what is it? Contingency.
You're right. Right.
Yes.
That's right.
And that's interesting. It was like $18 million, which... Okay, how much did Kawasaki lose and save by pulling out of MotoGP and this and that and the other? But if they're willing to plug $18 million in, it's like, geez, guys, why don't you just stay in MotoGP?
Well,
you know, it might have been another $40 million. So yeah, it's double, but still, you know,
maybe they want to win.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, you know, MotoGP, they're not gonna. No, seriously, they're not gonna win a MotoGP championship anytime soon.
Do you think they're going to win an AMA championship?
I don't know. I mean, AMA rules are so bizarre right now. Who knows?
Maybe, are there AMA rules right now? Is there anything?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't looked at the news lately to see what the latest disaster is. But yeah, I still thought it was fairly interesting that it was a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
And
speaking of that whole darn, you know, the Kawasaki thing, the Dornasaki thing, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all.
No, I don't think that's going to happen either. I think that's...
So the rumor is that that Espeleta and Dorna are basically... Well, Dorna is putting money into race one team worth of Kawasaki bikes. I guess two bikes from Milan.
One half a team. Yeah.
And, two bikes, but yeah.
Yeah.
And that just sounds like the stupidest idea ever because
and supposedly Melandri
factory support. I mean,
yeah. Supposedly Melandri has agreed that he would race this Dornasaki, as Darren called it, and all of that. And I don't see it happening. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, yeah, sure, Melandri would go out and give it an effort and all of that, but I don't see Kawasaki signing off on, yeah, sure, let our motorcycles be at the back of the grid, even though they're no longer green.
I think Melandri would be shooting himself in the foot also.
Yeah.
Although, you know, it wouldn't be, I think it'd be more like he would be required to ride these bikes because of his contract to Kawasaki, which is the only way he gets paid.
That's possibly.
If he doesn't race this year, he still gets paid as if he was racing for Kawasaki. If, however, there is a Kawasaki on the grid and he doesn't race it, then he breaks his contract, right? So he would have to race it, and that would suck for him because it would be the bike at the very end of the grid.
Right, but do we know that those are the terms of the contract? Or are we assuming that or what?
We're assuming. I think he is required to race, yeah.
He's still under contract. And yes, as far as we know, Kawasaki is still under contract also to pay him.
Right.
But why didn't they get Hopper instead of Melandri? And you know if these rumors have any legs,
I don't think they have any legs really.
No, I don't think they do either. But I think that
think about what you'd get. You'd get one. You'd do all that to get one extra spot on the grid filled, and it would be a bike that would be like the laughing stock.
Yeah. On the other hand,
whoever's riding it would be. End of career, you know?
yeah, this is true. On the other hand, though, that one bike would bring us up to, 18, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. See? And we've bandied about that's the magic number, 18. So to Dorna, this might be very important. One more motorcycle is all we need.
Mm.
And we don't care if we screw Marco Melandri and we screw Kawasaki. So from Dorna's side of things... That for them to do this,
that's a very interesting point.
It would set a bad precedent. It would if there is, and I looked at the rules and stuff, and I couldn't find anything about minimum grids and so forth. But I've seen so much in the trades about 15 being, if it's less than 15, you're screwed. It's no longer a Grand Prix. Now it's a cup race.
Right.
And then there's other things that say if it's less than 18, And these might be TV contracts. They might, who knows what it is, right? But I think it's very important to Dorna to have 18 motorcycles out there.
You know, I think Dorna should sponsor Team MotoGP OD.
That would be awesome. You could ride.
I have a race bike. I have a Ducati.
Yeah,
I mean,
I mean, we'll put some stickers on it. And
it probably does like half the horsepower of the.
Who cares?
Of the
you start
Sedici. Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
Carmelo will come up to you and tell you must crash on the first lap, so we can't see how bad you suck.
Right. But
other than that, you'll be out there, dude.
To it.
That'd be awesome.
Nice.
De Pugnier, yeah. We'll sign Randy to be the MotoGP OD rider because he'll naturally crash on the first lap. And you have the added benefit of getting to see his abs. It's a win-win.
All right. I think this is a good we should take a
it's an excellent segue into a call to talk about actual racing instead of bullshit. Yeah.
So. Well, the last thing I wanted to I think the other interesting news, and this is, we talked about this like a couple of shows ago, like the Hungarian round, you know, people are talking about it being canceled and whatever. I have to say that the moment that the Hungarian round was announced, I was already skeptical. I didn't want to put any bad juju on it or anything like that. And I posted a comment like this to Kropotkin's blog on his story about that round. I was like, you know, I'm from an Eastern Bloc country, and my parents still live in the ex-Eastern Bloc country, and I know how things work there. And there's just no way that a project of this magnitude can be finished in the time frame that these guys are talking about. There's like,
despite all
corruption,
the promises
and red tape and whatever, and that's. Even if you didn't have a meltdown, the financial meltdown that we have,
right?
Without that, I was really skeptical that there would be any chance of them finishing on time.
An entire circuit that
basically turned. Look, I mean, it's mud. It's still a field full of mud. They're going to keep talking. It's like, oh yeah. No, we'll get it done. We'll get it done. And, you know, that's the way things happen over there. It's like it takes 10 years to build a bridge. You know.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was skeptical from the get-go. Whenever they announce a race is going to be at this track that has not yet been built, immediately red flags go up.
Right.
I mean, even when, like, Qatar, they said, oh, yeah, we're going to do this night race. We haven't worked out the lighting, but we're going to do a night race. You know, and they pulled it together. But
they pulled it
also,
off.
How much money did they throw at it? And, yeah, and I agree though that the Hungary thing is a bit of a different mishmash. Have you heard or seen any news of any kind about this?
Well, just that almost everybody's saying that it's a no-go. That they're all starting to point fingers about why it's a no-go. But I think it's pretty much a done deal that it's not going to happen.
Right, and Hungary. I mean, for you know, you're talking Eastern Bloc countries, former communists, this and that, and the other, and they have somewhat of a. Collective mindset, if you will, but they don't have the resources of like China that can
that whole socialism crap totally did not work in the Eastern Bloc. It may have worked.
It never worked anywhere.
It didn't even work in the Soviet Union.
No,
everything
China would be the one example.
Yes,
because everybody was equally poor.
Right,
but now they're doing a little bit better. And all of that, and they did manage to pull together and sort of have you know a Grand Prix circuit and this and that and the other, but I mean we saw from the Olympics that it's like you know oh we're gonna have the Olympics let's start building stadiums and these stadiums are made out of like you know sand,
right?
But that's
like an industrial thing. The issue in these Eastern European countries is just unbelievable depth of corruption.
And red tape,
I mean, at every level, corruption at every level. Everybody's just stealing money left and right on every project. So every project becomes incredibly over budget and takes forever to do because the longer they can keep it building, the longer they can keep lining their pockets. And that's just the way it is.
Right, sure. It's like Casino. You ever see the movie Casino?
Yeah.
Where they've got the payoff, and the payoff was huge, and then eventually it turns out it's like this little small, you know, lunchbox size. Because everybody is skimming.
Right.
And I think you're right. So, which is sad.
Yeah, it's too bad, but I really would rather see around, like, I think we should go back to South Africa. I think Fakisa is a racetrack that all the racers like, and it's on a different continent. I mean, we just don't need any more European rounds. I mean,
right.
if this is
I would vote
sport,
Turkey,
we got to get some other continents involved.
Yeah, if you're going to be a world series, but on the other hand, you have the travel issues. See, and I would vote on that. I would say Turkey. It's almost on a different continent.
Yeah,
and,
I guess so. Yeah.
And I always loved the track. I thought the track was awesome. That one corner, the fastest corner in MotoGP, that was great. And the turn with like 8 apexes or whatever crazy stuff it was, I always liked that one too. I thought Turkey was a good track. But yeah, you're right. The Fikisa, or even if they don't go back to Fikisa in South Africa, there's Kyalami in what country is Kyalami in? It's in Africa.
It's in South Africa.
Is it in South Africa as well?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Kyalami? Okay, now I'm going to have to look that one up. And because there's the one awful
Oh, it's in
It's in Kyalami Racing.
It's in South Africa.
Is it in South Africa?
Of course, it's got to be South Africa.
Why? Why does it got it? There's a lot of countries in Africa, Jules.
No, but
just because South Africa happens to be the only one that sort of is. It is South African Grand Prix. I'm sorry, you're right. Okay, I was thinking it was in Zaire.
Because I know that when the God, it was like a really long time ago. Formula One moved from one to the other, or some other,
and it stayed in South Africa. Did it?
Yeah, it was a South African Grand Prix. It just moved from.
Okay, I apologize. I just looked it up on Wikipedia. It is in South Africa. Okay. The main thing I remember in Kyalami is that video from the 70s of the Formula One car hitting the track marshal. Which, have you seen that?
Oh, and, dude!
It's brutal. It's so sick. It's nasty. Yeah.
Tom Price.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was. Yeah,
it was awful.
Yeah.
But whatever. Okay, somewhere a track in South Africa, which is probably the most economically viable country in sub-Saharan Africa, to host a GP round. I mean, you're not going to have one in, you know, Nigeria or Zaire or, any of those other countries, because they're a mess right now. But South Africa, you could probably say that, yeah, we can host a MotoGP round. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And that would put it on that continent and all of that. And then I think you would, at that point, well, no, we still wouldn't have South America, but you would cover all the other continents.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, then we have racetracks in South America.
I know, but we don't have MotoGP races. We don't have MotoGP races at those racetracks.
Well, we used to have one at Rio.
I know, but used to and now are two different things.
Yeah.
Yes.
But Bob, all right,
but I'm sorry, Jules. I hate to bring the voice of reality into this. They might as well call it, instead of the World Championship of Motorcycle Racing, they might as well call it the European and Asian Motorcycle Racing Championship.
Well, we've got two races in America too. So.
I know, and that's might be an anomaly, and we'll find out in a few years, you know, whether or not that is. And we happened to enjoy both of those races in 2008, and it was great.
That's right.
Yes. So, should we talk about Japan, or are we just going to go on and on about the politics of MotoGP?
let's talk about these last four races of the 2008 season.
All right, the last painful, boring end of the MotoGP 2008 round.
So, Japan was interesting because I think Rossi had to finish like 7th or 8th in order to wrap it up.
Yes, very
well. A little higher up, maybe. But Rossi doesn't like to win championships without winning a race. However, he has never won at this track, or he hasn't won on four strokes. So it was a big deal. You know, we started off the weekend with of course Stoner kind of dominating, but qualifying was interesting because Lorenzo was back. It was his first pole since Estoril. Yeah, so we had Lorenzo, Stoner, and Hayden on the front row, and then Rossi was in fourth. With Pedrosa and Caparossi next to him. Caparossi, obviously, this is his best track. He won three in a row over there, 2005, 6, and 7. And on a Ducati. And in 2007, he won kind of under weird circumstances because he wasn't going to win that race if people didn't have to swap bikes. But anyway, he did win. And he obviously has tremendous confidence in himself on this track because he took that Suzuki, which is a track that requires a lot of horses, which Suzuki is not well known for. But he put the bike up on the sixth, and he did well during the race too. So that was good to see. And then we had a pretty good race for the first
few laps,
first half. No, first half actually. Pedrosa took off and was leading, leading Stoner, and then you know that long straight down the back. It's very tricky because you're going. It's the longest straight on the circuit, plus it's downhill, which means you pick up a lot of speed. By the time you hit one of the slowest corners on the circuit, and a lot of guys were running off there, both during practice, qualifying, and during. The race itself. Marco Melandri, I think, took a. I think like four or five guys went into the gravel there and had to find their way back. And that's just before the second tunnel. And then Stoner passed Pedrosa over there. You remember he kind of like passed Pedrosa very aggressively at the very bottom. Pedrosa did that little weave. We talked. That's when you told me about the phobia or whatever thing movement on the right that Pedrosa has.
Right side phobia. Yeah.
Yeah, and Stoner kind of like waved to Pedrosa like sorry.
Yes.
And Rossi, who had been stalking the both of them, not being able to gain much ground, and him suddenly just pounced and got past Pedrosa. Pedrosa got left behind, and then it was up to Stoner and Rossi, who were basically Rossi was just shadowing Casey for the next, I don't know, like 6 or 7 laps, and then finally don't remember exactly where he took over, but he took over, and then after that it got boring.
Right.
Because
yeah.
The rest of the positions were basically pretty solid at that point also.
Yeah, it was. It was pretty much, I mean, looking at the lap chart, which doesn't always tell you a super accurate portrayal of the race, and I'm trying to remember exactly the race, but yeah, the lap chart was, you know, the last 11 laps were pretty much locked on,
yeah.
You know, of no passing as far as the lap chart is concerned. And I admit I'm somewhat distracted as I review my Japanese GP by this picture of this woman wearing an A-style, you could call it a dress, but sorry, I'm distracted. But yeah, it was Motegi. I mean, yeah, Melandri ran off track and lost a bunch of places. So many of the guys. So Randy DiPino managed to finish the race, which was exciting. But Chris Vermeulen and the wild card, Akiyoshi.
Oh, Akiyoshi, that's right. Akiyoshi.
That was brutal.
From the
that
first
was awful.
Lap.
Yeah, sad.
Ouch.
Sad.
Ouch. Mm-hmm. It was a big chance. Blown.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, what at the end it was because Rossi won and he didn't even need to win to get the championship, he celebrated. We saw that very strange celebration that nobody really understood, but I really liked that pen that he had with a camera on it. So he had like a pen cam.
Yes.
He was signing, I don't know, I guess it was like a notary public type thing, like saying, yes, I accept my 8th championship or whatever.
A lot of the celebrations are very personal and very, they're a little
exactly.
bit confusing, you know, if you're not totally in with exactly what's going on in Valentino's sort of life. You're kind of like, what the hell is he talking about?
Yeah, I think you also have to be Italian.
I think that helps, yeah. Yeah, or at least speak Italian.
But he had those great shirts, which, man, anybody who has one of these shirts, it's like...
yes.
The Soup Mondial, whatever, Soup Mondial, with all the ingredients of all the things that it took to get to this 8th championship, so...
Right.
You know, so it was one Jerry Burgess and one this. It's really great stuff.
And it was a super good race for Valentino. I mean, you know, I think he could definitely be proud of that one.
Right. So he locked it up. Stoner didn't lock up second position. Pedrosa was still only 11 points behind, so he could still catch him. Loretto at this point was 40 points behind Pedrosa, so not much chance of catching him, but still mathematically possible.
Right.
And then, you know, we had a good fight between Dovi, Edwards, Vermeulen, and Hayden, Caparossi, and Nakano for the rest of the season.
For the also-rans, which,
for the
frankly,
also-rans.
Nobody remembers. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, it's a brutal but true fact.
Yeah. It was actually just hit me because I was looking through, I was looking for some record stuff because at the next round, at the Australian GP, it was actually Nicky Hayden who had the fastest lap of the Australian GP race, and he broke the last remaining 990 lap record at the Australian racetrack, which was actually at Phillip Island, which was set by Melandri in 2005 when he was riding for Grassini. And I was just looking through that season, and it was like, oh yeah, Carlos Checa finished on the podium that year, and that was just kind of like farewell, kind of FU to Ducati, I guess, because they already decided they were going to replace him. I was like, wow, Carlos Checa, that's right. He was still there in 2006. And then he went to, actually, he was still there in 2007, wasn't he? Yeah, he was on LCR.
Right.
Sorry, 2007 he was on an... Oh my God.
No, that's LCR.
Yeah, LCR, right. Yeah, sorry, yeah. And I was like, wow, Carlos Checa is already one of those guys who I'm starting to forget. That's so insane.
It's true. You remember the champion and all of that. You might remember the race winners, but anything after that, it goes away. It's very quick.
Yeah.
And so the whole, you know, who's going to be second? Yeah, that matters, you know, for a while, you know. And it's just sad but true.
Well, we'll remember guys like Gibernau and Biaggi and...
Only because they never won. I mean, honestly, truly, no, you know.
I think we'll remember them because they put up
such a great fight. And they were the guys like Randy Mamola. Best racer ever that never won a championship.
Right.
And Biaggi will be, you know, in there in that same group of, you know, fantastic racer that never won a championship. And also MotoGP personality for Biaggi. He does get that, at least in the last, I don't know, what, 10, 15 odd years.
Definitely.
You know, where it's a bit of a... That he played his part so well.
He had 4 250 championships. I mean,
no kidding.
Back in those days, that was much more closely followed than...
Yeah.
I mean, the rift between 250s and 500s was much smaller than it is between MotoGP and 250s now.
That's probably true.
There's a completely different fan base that follows MotoGP than it follows 250s, where it didn't used to be that way. It used to be just another class.
Yeah. I think that's a fair assumption. And also, though, like I said, I'm not knocking Biaggi's talents as a rider. I mean, we've seen him out on their World Superbike and all that. He's doing really, really great. And I've become more of a Biaggi fan.
Since he left MotoGP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I was always a bit of a... I liked him, but it was because of his anti-hero status, I guess you'd call
it,
MotoGP, that I thought, you know, Biaggi was cool to have there, but only because he's such an opposite to Rossi, and Rossi needs his sort of the balance, you know what I mean? And that's actually something that Rossi somewhat lacks now, the balance. It's hard to sort of Stoner is different. He's not the Biaggi to Rossi.
Because both
it's different.
And Rossi even talked about this at one point. I think it was after Laguna Seca when all the crap was flying out of Stoner's mouth and Rossi was just eating it up because he knew he had Stoner finally.
Right.
But Stoner was talking about the fact Valentino was talking about the fact that. You know, his great rivalries were Biaggi, Gibernau, and Stoner.
Yeah.
You know?
They're very different.
I think he actually gave the most kudos to Seth Gibernau, believe it or not.
Oh, really? I would have thought he would give him the most kudos to Rossi, or to Biaggi.
No.
Wow. No, but that might also be a holdover from just the whole, you know... Can't give Biaggi any cred.
Rossi's not going to give Biaggi anything.
Yeah. I'm still looking forward to Sete coming back next year.
It's going to be awesome.
It is going to be awesome. He had a few hangups in Sepang.
Yeah, which we forgot to talk about.
Sepang. Yeah, we didn't mention that at all. Sorry, Sete. On the other hand, he's still got the puddle mud hair going on. The puddle of mud hair.
Yes.
MotoGP News.com, the satire news site that is excellent, and they always compared Sete Gibernau to the lead singer of Puddle of Mud, which, you know, Puddle of Mud is gone and forgotten, you know, but Sete with the perfect hair. And it was, I always compared it to, like, remember Chips? I mean, you're my age. You watched Chips when you were a kid.
Of course, man.
Right? Ponch takes that helmet off, right? He's been riding around all day, hot sun. He takes that helmet off, and his hair is perfect. And it's like, you know, anybody that's ridden a motorcycle, that's not right.
You know, that is probably why at Laguna Seca, I never actually got to – that's the one rider I never got to, like – take a picture of or say hello to, because he was just running by probably to get his hair fixed.
He's doing his hair. Yeah. That's funny. So why don't we move on to Australia? We got three more races to cover, and we've been talking for 40 minutes. So
Australia was actually a really fantastic race to watch.
It's always fantastic. Not because it's a great track.
It is always fantastic. Rossi had a really bad off. Actually, this was a funky off at the fastest part of the track during qualifying, which left him on the 12th on the grid. This is the worst qualifying of the whole year. Whereas Stoner just completely dominated all the sessions and qualifying. Lorenzo was up there, so it was Stoner, Lorenzo, and Hayden again on the front. Hayden really likes this track. I don't know if anybody who actually does not like Phillip Island as a track.
They all say it's their favorite. I mean, or right
as
up
a, as a racetrack. I mean, I've heard that the garages are like outhouses, but the Pugnay was fast. Toseland and Pedrosa were. Shared the second row with him. Then we had Edwards, the Vizios, and Nakano. Deanna just kept Rossi, and then Rossi on the fourth row. So, and that off was weird because he didn't fall until, like, you know, he had slowed down from, I think, about 140 miles an hour to, like, maybe 50. But it was, you know, if you fall down at 50 miles an hour, you know that that's nasty.
Yeah, it's going to hurt.
It just seems, when you're looking on a TV camera, it just like, didn't look so bad. But he just tumbled, strained something, whatever. But the race itself was fantastic because Toseland was just incredible. It was,
yes.
It was one of the tracks that he really felt comfortable at. From his
Superbike
days.
Right.
And and he had gotten kind of, I think, used to the M1 by this point pretty well. And he was all confidence. And he battled everybody. Anybody who tried to pass him, he just battled them. And
there's a lot of also, it was World Superbike style.
Yes.
Yes.
Totally.
It was a good race.
Was cutting people off and, you know, pushing people off their line.
And not to extend this whole discussion any longer, but let's throw this one out there. Do you think that part of that might have been that Toseland really wanted to somewhat make up for the disappointing Donington experience? Because this is the next race where, you know, English, Commonwealth, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and all of that sort of thing.
And it's a racetrack that he knows. The moment I started talking about that, that's exactly what was going through my head. So, yeah, I think there's something to that.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that, just looking at the MotoGP OD downloads and whatnot, and this and that and the other, you know, it's dominated by English-speaking countries. Obviously, right. U.S. is first because it's a U.S. podcast, and then England, Australia, New Zealand, you know, anywhere they speak English – It's very, very big. And the other countries, even like Spain and Italy, where motorcycle racing is huge, but English is not, is much smaller. And I think that I think that was something with Toseland. I really do.
Yeah. And again, I also think that there's so much confidence involved, and he just felt confident on this track, on the bike. The weather was good. After some really strange weather during the we always have strange weather.
I was going to say strange weather at Phillip Island. Shocker.
Shocker. But of course, Stoner completely took off, and it was kind of pathetic because we didn't get to see anything else
at this race. I mean, again, Stoner. This is his round.
I know, yeah. I know. But the thing is, it's everybody's round in a way. It's everybody's favorite round.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, Stoner, Vermeulen, you know.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. But what I was going to say is that he got so little TV coverage. It was pathetic because the battle was so good for second and third. First for third, and then eventually for second. Because Nicky actually gave Stoner a good run for his money for the first five or six laps.
And which was amazing.
Only lost touch just a bit, so really kept Casey honest throughout most of the race. And he only really dropped off at the end just in time to be caught by Rossi, who came charging up the field. But because the Toseland battle was so excellent between him and Lorenzo and then him and Rossi, that that I think I think that the race winner and the guy who was in second for most of the race really got gypped.
As far as TV coverage and all of that, I agree. Yeah, because it was then this was the point in the season. Well, I guess it had been happening along, but that whoever the director of MotoGP coverage, they decided that it's like, well, we got to start showing these guys farther down the grid.
Right.
Yeah. And it was, if I recall correctly, this one was, as far as watching the coverage, it was
fantastic. It was just, the Tozen and Rossi thing was amazing. And then the fact that Rossi actually managed to make up a 6-second gap within like the last 10 laps or so on Hayden was also amazing. He timed it perfectly because it's really hard. I think when you're on a track and you're following some guy and he's only a couple bike lengths away and you can actually see him growing or shrinking, it's a great rabbit to follow. But when you don't even see the guy,
oh yeah, all you have is numbers on the board.
Motivation must be so difficult. And he, you know, Hayden did start to drop off because he chose a slightly softer tire than he should have, I guess.
He
likes a softer tire because he likes to spin up the wheel, and he also likes to
have a chance
in the beginning of the race. I think kind of like Rossi, he realized the only way to beat Stoner would be to beat him early. I mean, get with him early and try to pass him early on.
Right.
But eventually Rossi did catch him, which is, I think, pretty unbelievable because it seemed so perfectly timed. You know, like basically entering the last lap on that straight is when he passed Hayden.
Right. So. Yeah. And actually, this talk about Hayden makes me want to bring up something that I meant to bring up, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, so I'm talking from memory. But the Sepang tests.
Oh yeah.
That Hayden didn't finish all that great as far as straight numbers on the fastest. It was 10th or 11th fastest, something along those lines.
Right, 11th. Yeah.
Yeah, but he did shave a huge amount off from the first day to the second day. And granted, you know, Stoner...
Like 1.5 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. And Stoner shaved off a lot as well. But I think Nicky learned a lot at Sepang on that Ducati.
Yep.
And this is promising.
I think so. I think so.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you know, granted, you look at these numbers standing alone by themselves. Oh, wow. You know, Nick Hayden, 11th. You suck. But I don't think it's quite that simple. You know, it's. I think it was a big learning weekend for him.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. So I digress. Well, all right. Australia. So
Rossi won. Stoner won. Rossi beat Hayden. And we had three champions of the last 3 years sitting on the podium. I remember my wife pointed it out. He's like, oh, yeah, look at this. You got the 2007 champion, the 2008 champion, and 2006 champion sitting on the podium together. Kind of cool.
Right. Lorenzo took a fourth. The Nakano fifth. An excellent result for Nakano.
Oh, we should mention that because that Nakano really took advantage of the battle. At the very end, the battle came down to Tozen and Dovi for fifth, and Nakano took advantage of them kind of tangling up, I think, on the last
corner.
It was
very, very close to the end. Yeah, he pipped them right at the end.
He beat them right at the very end, and Dovi was extremely pissed at Tozen about it.
Yes, he was. Yeah, I recall that. And this is the stuff that makes it fun.
Unless I forget, Danny crashed at the very start of the race. We totally forgot to mention that. He
ran wide
at the corner before Luki Hikes, I think. So,
MG or whatever it's called, yeah.
One of those. I don't know. But anyway, he went off, crashed. That was bad.
Yeah, so it's bad.
That put a big dent in his chances for recapturing second place in the championship.
Right. And Alex Angelis as well had on that crash on, I believe, the same lap.
He actually tangled up Rossi, which made, because Rossi had an okay start, but then he got slowed down by De Angelis. There was an incredible shot from on board Rossi's bike with De Angelis crashing in front of him, and it was just like, how did Rossi manage to avoid the motorcycle?
Because he's Rossi. Exactly. And as far as for De Angelis, you know, De Angelis did a really, really great job last year. But, you know, the missteps and all of that sort of thing, and this was one of them.
Yeah.
It was a good race. I liked it.
He was the second most crashiest dude out there.
Was he the second most crashiest dude?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I didn't.
After Dacuña, definitely.
Wow.
Because I remember by this time we were doing, you know, the tipping contest. I was always like, okay, should I pick Dacuña or De Angelis? Dacuña, De Angelis.
See, I was just going with the easy Dacuña, Dacuña every time. All right, I've cast aside those results. Okay. Let's move on to the sultry weather of Malaysia.
Oh man, it was hot. Yes. It was hot just watching that race.
It was brutal. Yeah.
Heat. It was a fairly interesting race, I guess, for one lap.
I've never been all that impressed with this track.
Well, we had great races. We had a great race there in 2006 with Capirossi and Rossi.
I know. But everybody goes on about that the architecture is so beautiful. It's like, I think it's freaking ugly. And the two long straights with a weird-ass hairpin in the middle, and I've never liked. And there's just so many things that I'm not that thrilled about with Malaysia.
It has a great back section, really, actually. I'm talking from, you know.
Which back? You've got like two backs. You know?
Armchair Racer playing PlayStation 2. I really enjoy this racetrack in the except for the two straights. But it was a boring race.
Yeah, it always is. I think, honestly, there's some interesting stuff going on, but overall, hey, we're going to pick the next track to drop off the MotoGP calendar. Malaysia's got my vote.
Well, I hope not, because it would bring Asia down to one race.
Then you're talking about the politics of the thing, but yeah, okay, whatever.
Let's not spend too much time on this. The important thing to mention was that this is the race where Simoncelli grabbed his 250 crown.
Yes, this is true.
And then he got like a fine for riding around without his helmet on.
Did he?
Yeah.
But his hair would have protected him.
Exactly.
So I don't know why they're worried about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, though, Pedrosa led for like half the race, and then basically was dominated by Rossi on this one.
Right.
Yes. And I'm trying to recall the details of the race off the top of my head, and frankly, I cannot.
I just remember the heat and coming down. I don't know exactly where Rossi passed Pedrosa, but it was not like there was any fight back. Typical Pedrosa, he got passed and it was over.
Yeah, somewhat typical. Definitely true.
Right, so let's do the most boring round of the season, which is Valencia.
which is a huge disappointment, because it's Valencia. I mean, we're back to the home of MotoGP racing, right? This is Spain. This is the third Spanish GP, despite the fact that we call them different things. You know, sorry, Valencia is in Spain. And, yeah, exactly. It was a big snooze fest.
Oh, One thing we should mention about Malaysia was that Dovi got on the podium.
Yes, he did.
Yeah,
so and capping off a very good season for Dovi.
Yep. But at Valencia, we had, you know, by lap five or six, I think the top ten were already pretty much decided.
I'm flipping through the lap chart and stuff. Numbers were set by lap four. It was crazy.
It was a very disappointing weekend for me, because I really was rooting for Nicky Hayden. Now, Nicky Hayden was very fast through practice, but then he had a crash. It was in the warm-up. He had a crash in the warm-up, and he had to go out on his second bike, so he never got really quite the feel that he wanted. And that's really a shame, because it would have been fantastic for him to beat Pedrosa on that last time out on the HRC bike.
Right, because at this point it was a done deal that he was going to Ducati and all that. Yeah, exactly. And
it was the whole incident with the, you know, the little sticker.
Right.
Well, that was at this round, right?
Yes. I think it was.
And hypocrite.
Yes. And I do also remember being somewhat a little let down, because I was hoping for, you know, this capper of a race back at a, you know, European Grand Prix. Granted, you know, it's Valencia, not exactly the most exciting track in Spain, but still. And it was, yeah, I watched it and I was like, oh, that was underwhelming. Right. So, yeah, and it's a bit of a shame, really. Yeah. But yeah, results, we had, you know, Casey Stoner won it, which we kind of knew after about the first lap or so. Mm-hmm.
He took Pedrosa. Pedrosa led off the line, I think.
Barely.
Stoner passed him on the second corner, and that was it.
Yeah, exactly. Stepped out, and he's gone. Pedrosa ended up finishing second. Valentino third.
Valentino Rossi provided some entertainment because he had a pretty crappy start, and he was starting from 10th. So he had to pass some people in the first five laps, but then again he settled in.
Right. Once he settled in,
Actually, Dovi and Hayden had a good battle. They provided some fun pretty much at the very end. Hayden never got it back from Dovi, so like the chart doesn't look as interesting, but the actual race was fun in that sense.
And right, way back down the grid, and they did show you some of that on the coverage.
Yeah. Some nice little passing going on. But overall it was a afterwards I was like, eh.
It was a snooze fest.
Anticlimactic end to the season.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a little bit sad to sort of say that, but it was true. It's just the way it was.
Yeah. Well, so those last couple of rounds, Hayden went way up in the championship standings. He ended up finishing sixth. He beat Edwards. Nakano ended up beating Caparossi. So he was in ninth, which is, I think, pretty much his average position throughout the season, right?
Yeah, it was around there.
Eighth
or
ninth all the time.
Yeah.
And Rossi walked away with, you know, he had points at every single round, and he was on the podium in all but two rounds.
Yes, the only rider that got every points at every single round by far.
Yep. Yeah. And it was I think Delvey had points in every round except at the Italian round, so he was close.
So that's the closest you can get, but it's also the Dovi. Looking at it, I mean, yeah, who was his best finish here?
He hit a third and
fourth. A third. Sorry, we just talked about that. A third is Sepang,
and a lot of fourths.
And actually, no, not a lot of fourths. He had three fourths.
Well, that's
four fourths. Four fourths. Four fourths for Dovi. Yeah, so I mean, which is a lot. I mean, 18 races and all of that, rookie year and so forth. But yeah, he pretty much performed at his average level.
Yep. But the interesting thing, the amazing thing about Rossi was that he was in the podium 16 out of those 18 rounds. That's pretty much insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are some of the statistics that don't always get mentioned. When we passed, when Rossi passed Agostino, there was a lot of statistics thrown out about the number of wins and the number of starts.
Hey, Bob, can you say statistics again, please?
Statistics. Thank you. but the overall, this doesn't seem to get as mentioned as much.
Right. Yeah, no. And if you think about it, the fact that Stoner actually had a chance to catch Rossi is amazing because he had three rounds where he had no points at all.
Yeah.
And two crappy rounds on top of that. So, you know, kudos to Casey for giving Rossi a run for it.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, in the end, it was the consistency and nine wins that gave it to Rossi. The biggest win margin during the most points ever.
Yes, you're right. And he finished up almost 100 points. It was 93 points ahead of Stoner,
right,
which was a big, big gap as far as points was concerned.
Well, I think he's won by a bigger gap before in 2005. I think the gap was bigger between him and Melandri. But
the numbers were different somehow.
The numbers were different, yeah. I mean, there were less rounds. And actually, less rounds would make it even more impressive.
I recall that and all that whole thing, yeah.
So, but he also won by the the biggest gap during this season since the four-stroke era started at Misano. He won by 15 seconds.
Oh, the gap 8 seconds, yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Which, so, yeah.
That's pretty
and actually, that was the year when there was a couple of incidents where he could have won by even larger gaps. Wasn't it?
Yes, that's true.
Yes, yeah.
That's true.
But those aren't the numbers that we end up with statistics with. There's that word again.
Nice. I think it's like a robot. Like, get one of those like robot female voices to say statistics and just splice it into wherever you say that.
I might have to because I seem to be having trouble with that word today.
It's all the beer.
No.
The other championship standings were basically, I think, actually in Japan, Rossi wrapped up the championship and the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah, you say Constructors again, Jules.
Constructors.
Yes.
And the team championship also. But Ducati did take second in, obviously, the Riders' Championship. But and in the constructors, but not in team because Melandri was not much of a point getter.
No.
He got like 51 points, I think.
Not a big help.
Yeah, not a big help.
Poor Marco.
Meanwhile, you know, Repsol had both Hayden and Pedrosa, who both finished much better than
Melandri. Right, they did overall, and I mean, yeah, spotty performance here and there, but when they shined, they shined. Right, and unfortunately for old Marco, he never shined.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, China, I guess it's really pathetic going back and saying, well, that was his high point, a fifth.
Yeah, fifth.
You know,
yeah, for 11 points
that round. A guy like Melandri, who used to, you know.
He's won how many races? And he's,
five.
You know, yeah, exactly. And you know, Marco
second
Melandri.
In the championship 2 years ago. I mean, right. Or 3 years
he's
ago.
Not the guy where you say, wow, he finished fifth. That's really great.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that what makes me sad about the whole Dornasaki thing, if he does do that. Which I don't think he will.
Let's hope not. One last thing about Valencia, everybody finished the race, which was really the only time a complete race was finished without crashers. Because Indy was another track where everybody finished, but it was cut short.
Yeah. Yeah, he's true.
So that was kind of interesting. Nobody came off.
Looking at the results. All right, cool. Well, it was fun.
Did you want to
finish up our 2008 wrap-up?
Did you want to do a very quick thing about the tests, since we never actually went over the results?
Do you have them in front of you?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Let's talk about it.
Well, because I think it's worth mentioning that Caparossi on the Suzuki was third overall, and he actually led one of the sessions. The first session out, he was the fastest guy out there. So that's very cool. And he was always figuring up there. It wasn't until the third day that Rossi was able to best him. And they actually had a really interesting little mini race between the two of them, apparently. Now, I haven't seen any of the footage, but I was reading about the fact that on day two, Rossi and Caparossi had a little bit of a battle where they actually raced each other for about 6 or 7 laps. And I think Rossi ended up giving up because of, you know, he fell, quote-unquote, changing the curtains and cut himself, so he was still a little pain from that.
yes, changing the curtains.
that's a new euphemism.
Yes, I think it was.
So that was good, and Colin Edwards did really well. Tony Elias did great on the Honda Gresini. Actually, he was the fastest Honda.
Right.
Well, it's important because he is on a factory ride. Supposedly, I mean, it's the same bike that Pedrosa and Dovizioso are getting. So Grissini's super happy about that. Yeah, so Tech Twad did well, and
do you think it
was always like, does it mean anything?
I think for the season.
I think it means that Stoner is just as strong as ever, and the GP9 is going to be incredible, and the rest of it. I mean, obviously Rossi is going to figure, and the rest of it is just it's meaningless. I think like we've had tests where the Pugna came off the best, or
it's up in the air. It really is. It's testing. Yeah. It doesn't mean a whole lot. Some future predictions, but they're easy predictions. Stoner's going to do well. Rossi going to do well.
Right.
Woohoo! Really going on a limb there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. We saw Sete kind of struggling, but he's not that much off the pace.
Considering he's like 53 years old, he'll be all right. and all that hair time too.
Right.
Actually, another big plus of the whole Sete coming back to the round, whenever he crashes, we'll see the shot in the pit of his latest girlfriend. You remember that one? Right.
Yeah,
this is true.
He's recently divorced, so
there'll be all kinds of girlfriends.
Also hotties.
Yeah, right.
Definitely.
He'll be going through his second childhood.
Right.
And it'll be that classic thing that if Sete has any kind of problem, cue the girlfriend, and it'll be just it's interesting from its sort of entertainment value.
Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely. I also wanted to before we got off the air that I want to apologize for the flyover state comments.
As soon as you said that, and I was thinking, can I cut this out? And it didn't work.
Well, so basically, it's expected that us coasters make fun of people in the Midwest, and the Midwesterners make fun of the people on the coast. So it was just in jest. Anybody who got offended by it, big apologies. I did get actually called on it by Gian Luce. So yeah, apologies to anybody who got, we're just goofing around on this show, and we'll say some things that are not necessarily PC, but
we can say that because we live on the West Coast.
That's right. On, yeah.
And we know that everybody that lives in Indianapolis really wish they lived in California. Oregon. Man. Okay, yeah. We might be cutting that part.
Oregon.
Yeah. I like Oregon, dude. Okay. The problem with Oregon is that we have all of you California wieners down south of us,
That's right.
Washington people up north of us, and this is this mishmash
and
the traffic.
Oregon people all around you.
Yeah. I'll tell you, whenever you're out on the freeway and you're frustrated by somebody who cannot drive, they're from Washington or British Columbia.
Of course, absolutely.
Yes, occasionally, every now and then from California, but normally the guy from California's been a big asshole.
Right.
It's mostly the ones from Washington and British Columbia that just they park it in the fast lane,
and they're always smoking because they only smoke in their cars because they don't smoke in Seattle at all, for example.
Right, it's not allowed.
Nobody's a smoker except in their cars because the traffic's so bad over there. You
got to do something to relieve your frustrations.
Who else can we insult?
We
haven't gone off in Texas at all.
That's a good long topic for conversation there.
Yeah.
So
good.
Whatever, we'll cover Texas in another show.
Right.
All right. Well, that finishes up the 2008 season. That's kind of cool. I have no idea what we're going to talk about next week, but we'll figure it out.
Yep. All right, man.
All right.
Have a good one. Ciao.
Yep. Good one. Talk to you later. And that's going to do it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. Do not forget, if you got an iPhone or an iPod that can run an app store application, and you live in the United States, send me an email, contest164@motogpod.com. We'll get your name entered into the contest. I will announce the winners in 2 weeks, which is February 27th. And get yourself a free copy of Adam Kress's really cool live timing application for the iPhone/iPod, which is very, very cool stuff. And that about does it. Make sure you check out chasingchickens.co.uk. That's Paul Henshaw's charity ride around Ireland. Sounds like a lot of fun. Him and his two of his mates on Honda C90s raising money for UNICEF and the Manx GP Injured Rider Fund. And I think probably having a lot of fun doing it. But you can't really fault them for that. You know, if you're going to go and have a fun camping, riding around Ireland trip, why don't you combine it with a good charity? So that's really, really cool. Check it out. Make a donation. ChasingChickens.co.uk. And we will talk to you again next week. MotoGPOD is produced by Bob Hayes, and I'm solely responsible for its content. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.